And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Tonight we are recapping the Kansas-Colorado matchup, the game that I thought was going to be one that was, you know, a very competitive and very close and maybe even a bit of a nail biter, and it turned out to be anything but. To help me do that recap, as he usually does, it's Steve Fetch, our basketball editor over at Rock Chalk Talk. How you doing tonight, Fetch?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. So this game, to be honest, was never really that close of a game, which I, you know, it surprised me quite a bit. Were you surprised by the way this game went?
You know, yes and no. I did think that Colorado was going to have a lot of trouble scoring. I do think, you know, I noted in my preview that their best bet to score probably was going to be to shoot a lot of threes, and to their credit, they did that. Problem is they only made 20% of them or so, and, you know, regardless of how many you take, you're not going to score at a high percentage shooting 20% from three. So had they made a few more, you know, and made kind of a reasonable amount, you know, a 33% somewhere in there, then yeah, you're probably looking at a little bit closer of a game. Of course, I think the final score line does flatter Colorado a little bit, because Kansas put those walk-ons in with, you know, minute 30 left or whatever it was, and Colorado reeled off six or seven straight points. So could have been, you know, more of a 20-point win rather than a 16-point win, so, or 14-point win, sorry.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, kind of a, you know, one of those yes and no. I think, you know, maybe the number of points Colorado scored, I think maybe Kansas got away with giving up a few open threes, although I think for the most part they gave up open threes to guys who aren't great shooters. And you know, maybe Kansas did a little bit better job offensively than the numbers suggest, which, you know, we can kind of get into a little bit. But really, across the board, everything Kansas did offensively was really good. It's just the turnovers were pretty unsightly, and I guess maybe that's a worry going forward now.
Yeah, I mean, those were really the two big takeaways that I had from the game. Was obviously Colorado not shooting very well from threes, even though they took a ton of them. You know, we had kind of talked a little bit about it, and actually the preview I had done about Colorado, you know, with Jack from Ralphie Report, was talking of, you know, we got into that where they had not been taking very many threes, and it was very match dependent. Like, it wasn't a clear case of they just don't shoot threes. It was they had several games where it just didn't make sense for them to shoot threes because they were so dominant on the inside, which kind of skewed their numbers quite a bit. So we saw them take a ton of threes in this game, and they just weren't hitting anything. You know, which definitely causes a problem. When you shoot that poorly from three, the only way that you really can stay in a game like that is if you are turning the other team over quite a bit. And Kansas, like you said, you know, they really, they turned the ball over on 30% of their possessions, which is absolutely ridiculous. You know, that tells me two things about this team, and it, you know, it's been a trend so far this year. So I have to think that it's going to be difficult for them to kind of overcome that and change who they are. This is a team that turns the ball over quite a bit because they've done it in most of their games this year. But this is also a team, I think, that defends the three-point line a lot better than I thought that they would. And, you know, we've had the discussion before. There's been all the studies done that, you know, according to Ken Pom and all the statistics, you can't necessarily affect opponents' three-point percent shooting in terms of, like, how many they make. Really, the best you can do is not give them wide-open looks. So, like, you can't do anything about their wide-open looks. They're going to make however many they're going to make. But by forcing them to not take good threes, you know, uncontested threes, and forcing them to take bad shots, that's the best way to really defend against a three-pointer. Kansas seems to close out really well, and that's what I've noticed about this team. They've been able to close out really well on those three-point shooters. And like you said, the kind of the guys that aren't shooting very well anyway are the ones that get the open looks, you know, and we saw that. And so I really do think that those are kind of the two identities of this team that we've seen so far, to go with, you know, absolutely dominant down low. So Do you think that we're going to be seeing these types of issues all year long? And if so, like, are these things that could come back to bite them, or are they just so dominant on the inside that we're not really going, this may be something that we have to live with all year long, but maybe it's something that we're fine living with if all these other things are working really well for them.
I think you're right that teams aren't really going to be able to score inside on Kansas until they're going to have to. And not only are they not going to be able to score on the inside, they're not going to be able to stop Kansas on the other end. So that's going to lead to them taking quite a few threes. So yeah, I mean, I think it's one thing that we're probably just gonna have to live with over the course of the season. Just pulling it up now, and they're like fifth from the bottom or sixth from the bottom or something like that in terms of allowing 3-point attempts. So certainly you'd like to not be there, but one thing I do think in kind of this new age where everyone's taking threes, the national average for 3-point rate is up over 37%, even with the farther out arc. So in this day and age when everyone is taking threes, I think 3-point defense is now not so much about whether you're going to give up open threes, but kind of who you're going to give those open threes to. And one thing that I think Kansas has done a relatively good job so far, and I've seen some gifs from Jesse Newell on Twitter where he's pointed this out really well, but one thing that they do really well is they give up threes to kind of guys who you'd like to give up threes to. So if they can keep doing that, yeah, there's definitely going to be games where teams get hot. And Kansas is probably going to lose a game that maybe they shouldn't just because a team shoots, 50% from three or something like that. But over the long haul, I think that I think it's going to be okay. It's just going to be a matter of, is it going to be okay for six consecutive games in March and April? I mean, I think that's what it's going to really come down to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, and there's enough to worry about there that you have to think it's not going to go perfectly for over those six games when you have those glaring weaknesses. The question becomes, are they that strong down low? And are the teams that are able to take advantage of the weaknesses that they do have unable to overcome, those huge strengths that they have? So it's definitely kind of a catch 22 almost, in that they really, really have to figure out how to shore up those areas without losing, that super good effectiveness they have on the offensive end. They've actually done, I think, a really good job, like you were saying. Now, I will say this last game, DeShawn Schwartz, went 0 for 7 from 3, and he is, on the season, he's a 41% 3-point shooter. Even after that. So he was absolutely on fire coming into this game and, had an offer. And so I understand why he kept shooting because he is probably by far their best 3-point shooter, but he was not able to make any. I think this was partly, making sure the right guys were shooting it, but also partly getting a little bit of luck, maybe affecting his shot a little bit more than you might think. But to be honest, like, Kansas was fairly fortunate that they missed as many threes as they did. Even if they were able to affect that percentage some way, there's definitely no way that a team like that can take a, on the season over a 7-game sample size, a 50% almost 3-point shooter and make him miss every single shot that he takes. So, I mean, they definitely did a good job playing defense. And there was definitely a lot of times where they forced Colorado to do things that it was very clear Colorado didn't really want to do. But the question, really, I think, is going to be how many more times are they going to get that? And is anybody going to be able to stop them down low? Because, like you said, if they're getting whatever they want down low on the offensive end, other teams are going to start pressing. They're going to start shooting 3-pointers they really shouldn't be because they've got to keep up somehow.
Yeah, and I think, so to push back a little bit, well, not really push back, I guess, but just to add a little bit more. So Schwartz, you're right, really good shooter coming into the game. Only shot 31% from three last year, and obviously a much bigger sample size. So maybe he did discover something. Maybe he is a better shooter or whatever, but probably not the shooter to the level that, he was showing coming into the game. But I think kind of regardless of how good or bad you are, I mean, an 0 for 7 is pretty rare, and you got to get lucky to get that. So probably more splitting hairs than anything. But you're right. I think the point you made at the end there is really good. These are college kids and not NBA players, and I think they're more, especially in like a one and done situation in the NCAA tournament, they're more susceptible to saying, hey, Kansas has basically a free 2 points every time they dump it inside to Udoka Azubuike, so it's a lot more important that I make this three and stuff like that, and they grip the ball a little bit harder and stuff like that, and maybe that has something to do with lowering their percentage. I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen any kind of math one way or the other on that, but I would be more likely to buy that in a college environment than an NBA one for sure.
Well, I mean, yeah, they are, there's a reason you talk about even like NBA rookies in terms of the maturity that comes with playing at that level for so long and, really being professional. College players, no matter how good they are still having to deal with the ups and downs of not having that professional experience, not, being as emotionally mature and able to handle the ups and downs that come with big time college basketball. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of those things. You can't count on it, but what you can count on is, that there are going to be weaknesses in everybody's games, that if you can find ways to exploit them, and if you can be as consistent as Kansas seems to be on the inside, then you've got to feel good about their chances to get everybody else kind of outside of their comfort zone. All right, I do want to talk a little bit more about some of the individual players, but before we do that, I'm going to go ahead and throw it to our first quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. All right, so individual performers from this game. I want to get your thoughts on who you thought the best player in this game was, because Ken Plum tells me that it was Devon Dotson, and he had a really good score line here. I'm having a hard time going with anyone else, but I think you could at least make an argument for Udoka Azubuike. But where would you go with that for the MVP of this
Yeah,
game?
well, I think it obviously, always starts with those two. I think Isaiah Moss led the team in plus minus and kind of has for a while. So that's another guy who
Which is like the
I'm
weirdest thing
obviously
ever.
skeptical of. Yeah, I know. I'm pretty skeptical, excuse me, of plus minus, but we're getting close to the point where I'm going to start thinking that he just needs to be on the floor a lot more. Ochai Agbaji had a really nice game, 20 points, 12 rebounds, which like the quietest 2010 game I can remember. I don't really like, other than that three in the corner where he got the flop warning, which was ridiculous. I don't really remember a ton of his game, but I think he's probably a good choice. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just gonna go Azubuike just because I think he, more so than the numbers. I mean, he's just such a weapon inside. He just sucks everyone in. Gets the other team or gets the other players on the team a ton of open looks. Really good on both ends of the floor. I mean, I just think it has to be him, to be honest with you. Good game by Marcus Garrett too. Four steals, six assists. Four turnovers was not great. Missed a couple of pretty easy shots at the rim, which you haven't really seen a lot of from him this year. But for the most part, had a really nice game as well.
Yeah, like we talked about in the last episode that we did, Marcus Garrett turned it over four times, but he had four steals that kind of negated, I think, the impact of those turnovers. I think what's become pretty clear is that Marcus Garrett, like we were questioning whether there was defined roles for this team, and I think we've kind of answered that with this Colorado game. Marcus Garrett is that lockdown defender that we have. Devon Dotson is kind of an all-around style point guard who can do a whole bunch of stuff, can slash to the basket. Udoka Azubuike is, the weapon inside that opens up everything else. Ochai was able to have a huge game, but a lot of that opened up because of what Azubuike did inside. So even though Ochai's stat line is a whole lot better than what Udoka had, like a lot of that was because Colorado was selling out to try to stop Udoka, which opened things up for Agbaji. And I'm not like trying to take away from what Agbaji did, but he was not good in the first half, to be honest, offensively. And really caught fire in the second half when it became pretty clear that Colorado had to sell out inside, to make sure that Kansas just didn't get to 2 points every single time they went down the floor. So, like you were saying with Isaiah Moss, the whole plus minus number, like Jesse Newell, the one who kind of pointed out those stats, was talking about his own, you know, skepticism of the plus minus number. But it is kind of interesting that, you know, every single game that they've played essentially this year where he's played prominently, his plus minus number is plus like 2 or 3 points over what the final margin is, which is kind of crazy to think about. So I don't know if go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, I think, you know, some of that can probably be explained by the fact that, you know, when he comes off the floor, guys like Silvio De Sousa and Christian Brown, who haven't been very good this year, are coming in. So I think that probably has a lot to do with it. But I also do think, I mean, I think he's playing pretty well. He's shooting over 40% from three, which is what you want. And defensively, I think he's been a lot better than he's gotten credit for. And like I said on Twitter, a lot better than maybe a couple of unsightly highlight reel plays kind of to his detriment have made him look.
Yeah, I think part of it too, and I saw some people that were kind of speculating on this, that I think part of it just has to do with the fact that when Isaiah Moss is on the floor, they're usually playing four guards, which opens up the spacing, makes the offense flow a little bit better. You know, just in general, it's kind of the set that works well. Like, I have not seen an instance where Isaiah Moss is on the floor with only two other guards and two big men, which is, you know, where we kind of seem to have some problems in terms of the offensive flow and things like that. So part of it is probably just situational, where he's, you know, coming out in sets that are going to be beneficial to the team as a whole. And I think the other part of it is, like you said, you know, he's probably a little bit better defender than people gave him credit for. He is hitting the shots that he's supposed to be hitting for the most part, which is definitely going to help there. And so, you know, again, I don't know how much credit actually goes to Moss and how much goes to the scheme and the way, you know, everything's kind of just going around him. But, you know, I'm having a hard time finding any particular player, you know, that I'm thinking is super underperforming other than a guy like Silvio. And, you know, I mean, like, Enaruna has been playing fairly well. He hasn't been consistently game in and game out. He's been a phenomenal player, but he's definitely played the role that he is meant to play on this team. And so I'm having a hard time really criticizing any of these players for the way that they've been playing so far this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think Enaruna struggled a little bit on Saturday, but you're right. I think for the most part, he's played a lot better than I thought he would. And we've, you know, talked about this ad nauseum, but he and Christian Brown have kind of done the opposite of what I thought they would do this year. And Enaruna specifically has been, frankly, pretty good defensively, especially off the ball. If you watch him, he does a really good job at, like, you know, getting around screens and getting his hands into passing lanes and stuff like that, and stuff that I'm sure is going to earn him some more playing time, even if he didn't really play a lot on Saturday and, you know, like I said, didn't play very well. But I mean, I think the plus minus thing can be kind of explained by, you know, the factors that you laid out. Although I think that probably shortchanges how good Moss has been this year as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's been good. I mean, I wouldn't say that he's been like the go-to player that they really have needed, you know, and the other players have played well enough shooting from three that, while I don't want to know what this team would be like without him, like, I don't think they would have been completely horrible and, like, missing. It wouldn't have been like last year, you know, where they just were missing when Vic wasn't playing. They really had nobody who could shoot the three consistently well enough, you know, to really kind of open up the offense. They have guys who are playing well enough who could do that this year. All right. So I think we've kind of talked the Colorado game to death, unless there was any of the Colorado players that you wanted to call out.
Well, I think kind of indirectly, I guess we'll talk about Colorado as a way to praise Kansas. Great job by Marcus Garrett and company on Tyler Bay. He had an okay game when you look at, like, his, you know, peripheral numbers. 4 steals and 9 rebounds is really nice. Got to the line for 5 free throws, but guy took 3 shots all game. I mean, I don't know how they think they would have any chance of winning, you know, with their best player only taking 3 shots. And, you know, you would think that they got a ton of open looks given all the threes that they got and stuff, but, like, not a lot of those came off of passes by him. Like, I don't think he got robbed of a lot of assists or anything like that. So, really good job by Kansas on him. I don't know if they learned something from playing, you know, another similar player in Obi Toppin, or if, you know, Bay just isn't as good as he was, and Kansas was able to shut him down because of that. But really encouraging sign going forward for when Kansas plays guys like that in the future.
Yeah, I was definitely impressed. I thought it was a rather interesting game. They played such a good game against him that he was, I believe, either fifth or sixth on the KenPom Player of the Year standing coming into the game, and he is now nowhere to be found on the list at all. And in fact, Devon Dotson jumped up into seventh overall in the nation so far. Nora from Louisville is running away with it at the moment, but there's still a whole lot to be played there, and Devon Dotson has kind of come on strong in the last couple games here. But you're right. They played a really, really good game against Bay. I was a little surprised just kind of knowing his reputation and how things have kind of gone for him. So I was definitely glad to see. That seems to be Bill Self's calling card is the defense, and this year they are definitely getting back a whole lot better to playing the style of defense that Bill Self would be proud of. So, all right. We'll go ahead and leave the Colorado talk there. I do want to just briefly look ahead to what's coming up, but I am going to go ahead and throw it to another quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. All right, so we are going to wrap up a little earlier than we normally do, but before we do that, because of the schedule that's coming up, they're playing Milwaukee, I believe it is, this game coming. When this comes out, that will be the game that is actually coming up tonight. Kansas is playing Milwaukee tonight. They're expected to just completely obliterate them. And then they will be playing a neutral site game against UMKC. I believe that is the Sprint Center game for this year, coming up on Saturday. So we'll kind of just look at both of these games really quick because I'm not sure that we'll be having a basketball episode the rest of this week. So Fetch, anything from these two teams that jump out to you at all?
They're both really bad. That kind of jumps out at me. Probably the two worst teams that Kansas is going to play the rest of the year, probably even including if they get a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. So enjoy them. This is going to be the, kind of the only blowout that you get. Milwaukee, of note, beat UMKC when they played earlier this year at Milwaukee, 61-52. They also defeated my other alma mater, the University of North Dakota, so this is a payback game tomorrow.
Well, it's a good thing that Kansas could go ahead and pay him back for you. But yeah, in terms of games that are on par with this one, the only game that's on par is Kansas playing Monmouth. And, we all know how that one went. That was a gigantic 55-point win for Kansas. I would not be surprised to see a similar type of game, especially if Kansas decides that they really just kind of want to, take out some frustration on Milwaukee. I think that Bill Self will call the dogs off a little bit sooner in this type of game than he normally would. So we might get to see Chris Tehan get a career high in this particular game. I would not mind that at all, especially with it being a weekday game that would give us a good opportunity to kind of shut it down early and be ready to kind of move on at that point. But yeah, the UMKC game, this is the only time I think that I've gone into a Sprint Center game and not been worried at all, even the tiniest bit, that Kansas could potentially lose that game. Normally they're playing like a Pac-12 opponent or someone who's at least decent, and for some reason they decided to schedule this game. Not really sure why, what they weren't able to get that they really wanted to get there, or what's going on. But normally this Sprint Center game is a little bit better, something that the people that buy the season ticket package would actually want to go see. So enjoy it. If you guys are going to the game, it should be an absolutely phenomenal KU blowout. It's technically neutral just because UMKC is right there, but we all know this is actually going to be a home game for the Jayhawks. Like you were saying, I am not really expecting anything other than Kansas destroying both of these teams. Also, part of the reason why we're probably not going to have a basketball episode on Friday. Haven't decided yet if we're going to be talking hockey, if we're going to do a football wrap-up, but we will definitely have something for you guys on Friday. It won't really include any kind of basketball talk because we'll still be in the middle of this stretch. We will be getting ready, though, next week for the Villanova game. That should be a fun one to talk about. So I will talk with you early next week, probably, Fetch, about that one. But before we get out of here for the night, did you have any other final thoughts about this team that you wanted to leave us with, or did you have a random sports minute for us today?
I think, you know, I'll go one of each. I think, you know, early in the season, I was pretty hyperbolic about how good this team was. I thought that they were, a favorite, so to speak, to make a deep run in March and make a Final Four run and potentially be a national championship caliber team. And I think that this first month of the season has done nothing to dissuade me from that fact and has only, you know, strengthened my opinion there. For my random sports minute, I'm going to jump over. We're going back to cricket, cricket minute. And the United States cricket team scored a big upset yesterday. They played Scotland, who is actually a pretty decent team. They've recently beaten England, and the United States beat them by 35 runs. So a nice little win by them, and hopefully they keep it going. Although, given who's in charge of USA cricket, that could be a whole other podcast. I'm not terribly optimistic.
Yeah, I'm not terribly optimistic either, but, you know, cricket is one of those, you know, that I have a hard time thinking that most people in the U.S. are really going to care, you know, how much they're going to get creamed. So should be lots of fun to watch if you really are like me and are a huge sports junkie. I'll probably usually pretty much watch anything. So I might have to check that out. But, yeah, I definitely would recommend the little bit I've seen of cricket. It definitely is exciting. It's more exciting than a game of baseball, which is probably the thing that it's closest to. So definitely check it out if you have the opportunity. Where are you able to see that? Is that like an ESPN Plus thing, or is it one of those weird random online channels?
So if you follow USA Cricket on Twitter, they will put a lot of them on YouTube, which is nice. You can just, you know, they'll post the link and you can click through and stuff. Yeah, if you want to watch any of the really good teams, you kind of have to scrounge around to maybe some sites that, you know, you want to have your ad block and virus protection in order.
Seriously, in this golden age of the internet, you would think there'd be a better way to watch whatever random weird sports that would be out there.
Yeah, cricket is. Yeah, we're getting far afield, I guess. But if you have Netflix, there's a really good what's his face? Hasan Minhaj does a show called Patriot Act, talking about a bunch of stuff. And one thing he did was on cricket TV rights and stuff that explains it really well and why it's so messed up.
I might have to go check that out. Sounds good. So not only did we get a random sports minute, but we also got a Netflix recommendation. So awesome. We're just giving you guys all kinds of stuff here on the Rock Chalk Podcast today. So, all right, Fetch, we will go ahead and leave it there. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. And thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, please go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the other million apps that are out there. Subscribe to the podcast. Just search for Rock Chalk Talk, and then you can subscribe there. Give us a rating and a review. 5 stars, nice comments would be great. But if for whatever reason you're not able to do that, just let us know what it is we could be doing better. We really do bring this podcast to you guys to give you guys all the information that you need in as an entertaining way as possible. So if you ever have any comments, questions, suggestions, people you want to try to interview, anything like that, just go ahead and contact me either by email, rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com, or on Twitter @rockchalkpod. And of course, you can always talk with Fetch over at the Rock Chalk Talk Twitter account as well. But we will go ahead and leave it there. Once again, Fetch, thank you for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.